From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
You may think Henry R. Luce is the genius behind Time magazine, but actually, as much as anyone, it was Brian Haddon. He'd conceived the idea when he was an undergraduate at Yale and then masterminded its creation. So why has all of the credit gone to his lifelong collaborator and rival, Henry R. Luce? Well, the story of their partnership is told in Isaiah Wilner's The Man Time Forgot, published by HarperCollins. I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Wilner to my show today. Hello.
Hi.
So why do you link the births of these men with the explosion of the USS Maine in Havana? Isn't that just a coincidence?
Well, it was a key moment in the development of American journalism, because that's when yellow journalism really began to be noticed by the entire nation. And Haddon was born just a few days after the sinking of the Maine, right when the newspapers were coming out. So it always seemed to his mother like he was born under the star of journalism.
And he was born into the upper crust of New York society.
That's right, Brooklyn Heights.
Typical of his class?
Atypical of his class, because from a young age, he was a brilliant writer. In fact, his mother put a bell by his bedstand, and just before dropping off to sleep, sometimes poems would pop into Haddon's mind, and he would say, "I have a little poem, Mother. Do you care to take it down?"
And he also, you say, was obsessed with statistics and personalities.
That's right. And you could see that in Time.
It looks like Time magazine is already forming in this little child.
Well, that's why it was so odd that Luce was able to take the credit for Haddon's idea, because it really sprang from inside of his soul.
And then his father died when he was very young?
That's right. When Haddon's father died, that was really when a sense of loneliness and an inner feeling of depression sort of creeped inside of him.
Was Luce also born around the time of the sinking of the USS Maine?
Luce was born just a couple months after Haddon, and the key event of his early childhood was the Boxer Rebellion, because he was the son of missionaries in China, and they were forced to flee.
Was his family wealthy as well?
Well, they were intellectually wealthy, but they had almost no money compared to Haddon's family. But for missionaries, they were considered wealthy, and they lived in what was called a Renaissance villa. For missionaries, it was a big house, but they didn't have running water.
And he had a stammer, didn't he?
That's right. Luce suffered from a stammer. And so when he went to Hotchkiss and met Britton Haddon, he was quite shy. He was also desperate to get ahead. And he admired Haddon as a guy who was always in the center of the action, coined nicknames and witticisms. And he was drawn to Haddon and attracted to him.
Well, Haddon was rich and probably could have gone on a scholarship by today's standards, but didn't need to. Luce was a scholarship student.
He was a scholarship boy, and in fact, he was forced to serve breakfast to his schoolmates and clean the blackboards after class. So he always felt like he was trying to get into the inner circle of which Haddon was so much a part.
And they would have seen him as somebody who was below them in class because of the things he had to do for the scholarship?
Well, he was just somebody that nobody really quite got. He was so intensely intellectual, so the other boys would admire him, but they were also in awe of him. But that's why Haddon was attracted to Luce, because he recognized his intense brilliance.
Luce also came out of a missionary family, and Hotchkiss was a Christian school.
That's right. It had a Calvinist atmosphere. And in fact, Huber Gray Beeler was the strict headmaster, and he told the boys that what they were at 20, so they would be at 40, only more so. So it was strict, and they were told that they had to be good Christian gentlemen.
And also good athletes in most cases. These two guys were not great athletes, and yet they became big men on campus.
They found a spot on the campus newspaper, the Hotchkiss Record, and that was when their competition and rivalry began. It was when they were competing to become the editor of the newspaper. And this continued at Yale, with Luce always just a hair behind Haddon, racing to catch up with him, but always finishing a close second.
Was that a source of resentment?
Especially after Haddon won the chairmanship of the Yale Daily News and became the biggest man on campus. He was known as a kind of super king because he was the chairman twice. The older students had left to fight in the First World War, and he was actually elevated to this post as a sophomore, and lose to his great disappointment, lost by only one vote. So this deep feeling of envy was within Luce, but at the same time, Haddon picked him up and said, hey, Luce, you can write half the editorials, and we'll basically be 50-50 partners.
Then, and Luce also took over the Lit magazine, didn't he?
At Hotchkiss, Luce was the editor of the Lit, and when the rivalry began, he had stolen the pictures that the yearbook staff was saving to print and printed them in the Lit. And that's what started a controversy on campus, and Haddon began teasing Luce for doing this, and so that's how this rivalry was joined.
Hey, Luce wound up getting doing things that got him the nickname Crooked.
That's right. And that was the big episode that led to that nickname. And he was really injured by that. His feelings were easily hurt. But as he became better friends with Haddon and they fell into this deep intellectual relationship, Luce's social life improved and he was taken up by the wealthy crowd and became one of them.
And then they went to Yale together.
That's right.
Did they choose to go to Yale together or was that just a coincidence? In the same way that going to Hotchkiss together was.
About 90% of Hotchkiss went on to Yale at that time.
Uh-huh. And they wound up going back into editorships.
That's right. In fact, they walked around the Hotchkiss track when they first entered Yale, and they said, hey, we've got a problem here. We're both competing to join the Yale Daily News in this intense competition. And that was when Haddon proposed to Luce, maybe one of us should skip the first healing competition, as it was called, and that way we can help each other make the staff.
Healing was kind of like fraternity hazing?
It was like hazing, except for it was entirely based on work. And healing was the word that was used in Tammany Hall, you know, for the young political acolytes that were trying to become big men in New York City politics.
Ward healers.
Ward healers.
H-E-E, not H-E-A.
Exactly.
I was shocked to read that the Yale Daily News was a profit-making enterprise. And the students actually earned money from it.
They made a tremendous amount of money. In fact, enough to fund a year of leisure if you were the editor. You could take the whole next year off after college. And that's what funded Luce's trip to Oxford.
They were there at the time of the war.
Yale was interrupted by the war. In fact, the campus became a military camp. And this was what really created time, because during the war, Britton Haddon and Henry Luce went to train in Camp Jackson. And they were training these men, these young 18-year-olds sent in from the farms in the hills, who were extremely uneducated. In fact, people who hadn't even been to high school, let alone college. And that was when they realized that the vast bulk of America knew very little about the world. And they decided then to solve the problem of human ignorance.
My guest is Isaiah Wilner. His book, The Man Time Forgot, A Tale of Genius, Betrayal, and the Creation of Time magazine, which is published by HarperCollins. You went to Yale. Are these things discussed at Yale?
There's still one place where Britton Haddon's name is known, and that's the Yale Daily News. It's a tall, skinny building, and on the top floor, there's a wood-paneled boardroom. And that's how I got into the story. I used to sit and work beneath Britton Haddon's dusty portrait.
He must have made a lot of money at the Yale Daily News.
About $5,000.
Which was a lot of money.
Bundle.
In those days, it's still nice to come out of college with $5,000. But then that sounds, what was that? Must have been like $50,000.
Oh, it was a tremendous amount, and Haddon put it in a bank account, and he saved it to found Time.
Really? So he had the general idea for Time magazine?
And when he was at Hotchkiss, Haddon printed a column of world news when the First World War broke out, and he wrote at the top that it was for people who didn't have time to read the daily newspapers. And he first started discussing the idea with Luce at Hotchkiss. They developed it further at Yale, and by their senior year, they were intent on starting this thing. But Luce was really more desperate for power and influence, and he had actually been fired from his first job as a journalist in Chicago at the Daily News, so Haddon wrote him a letter. He told Luce that there were a couple jobs open down at the Baltimore News, and if they were ever going to start this paper, this would be their chance.
So Haddon was generous to Luce as well.
You know, I don't think Haddon ever envisioned doing time without Luce. He deeply admired him and relied on him as a kind of editor of his thought.
Luce has said that the one great idea of Time was simplification.
That's right.
So that the idea was similar to what we see today, to look at the news stories of the week, kind of put them in simplified form and then make them available to people who don't have the time to read the newspaper every day?
Time succeeded in doing what no magazine quite does today, which is to bring all the news from around the world, compress it into less than 26 pages, and make it fun. That was Haddon's great achievement, turning the news into a form of entertainment.
What was the reaction of people they passed the idea by?
Well, people were shocked. First of all, this idea that someone would be interested in reading week-old news? I mean, old newspapers at that time were used for wrapping fish.
Well, today this is still an issue, and that's one of the reasons that Time has now started publishing on Friday instead of Monday, because they're concerned about the news cycle even being faster now than it was then.
Absolutely. Interesting point about that. Haddon always envisioned Time to be published on a Friday so that all the millionaires going home on the train to Glen Cove could catch up on the news they missed.
So that's what they thought their audience would be, the millionaires?
That's how it started.
Who went home to Glen
Cove? It started with the idea that wealthy people didn't have the time to make it through these newspapers like the New York Times. But then it quickly expanded. And actually, it expanded to the middle class in places like Cleveland or St. Louis, even as far off as Walla Walla, Washington. I found a letter from a reader who wrote them that he was so angry his copy of Time hadn't arrived because he depended upon it to look smart for his business life.
Now, they had to have raised money to do all of this. As much as they may have made at Yale Daily News, it wasn't enough to start a magazine.
No, and in fact, they had a lot of difficulty raising money. Finally, Haddon and his one-armed cousin, this brilliant man, John Martin, who had a mellifluous voice and a real way with women, drove off across the country, stopping at golf clubs along the way to raise money.
Were they planning to sell it on the newsstands, or was this a subscription magazine?
Well, from the beginning, they didn't think they'd have much success on the newsstand, but they began to have success around 1927 when they switched to that famous red cover. And then shortly after that, they named Charles Lindbergh the Man of the Year, and then things really started to pick up.
And you suggest those are all ideas that Haddon had. The Man of the Year, for example.
Well, the red cover came about, for example, because Robert Johnson, the advertising manager, mentioned to one of his colleagues that he was having trouble selling Time off the newsstand. And the guy said, "What you need on the cover are pretty girls, babies, or red and yellow."
And red and yellow is what won out. But they did come up with all sorts of innovations, like the business of selling advertising.
That's right.
We're still selling advertising for magazines the way they innovated.
Yeah, Haddon turned selling advertising into a kind of storytelling, just the way he did with the magazine. One of the great things that they did is they really transformed the coverage of politics. They turned it into much more of a horse race based around personalities. And the opening section of Time had a section called Mr. Coolidge's Week. And in this column, readers learned that Mr. Coolidge kept seashells on his desk and that his pets ran away and that he exercised in the morning by riding an electronic hobby horse.
Now, there also were the style matters of this magazine. Was Haddon responsible? I've always thought Henry Luce was the guy who came up with the Time style.
Luce was the business manager, and in fact, he was rarely seen in the editorial rooms. But Haddon came up with Time style, and he was inspired by Homer's Iliad. And so that's where the backward-running sentences came from. He would actually, his Iliad is still in the Time Inc. archives, and he would write down his favorite sentences from the book and show them to his friends, the writers, and tell them to bring it into the magazine.
So we have this magazine, and it is struggling to survive. A couple of big news stories, Scopes trial, you say. What was some of the others? I really pushed it over the top. And now we have these two guys who are both running this thing, and they've had a long-standing rivalry at the same time, a long-standing friendship. What goes wrong?
The circulation is expanding. It's up to about 200,000. And Haddon and Luce have extremely opposite ideas about the direction of the company.
Well, they moved to the Midwest for a while. That must have caused trouble because Haddon didn't want to go.
Haddon was exhausted. He went on vacation. He came back from vacation to find out that Luce had committed Time to move to Cleveland. And then shortly after that, Luce accepted an honorary degree from Yale for the achievement of Time, of creating Time. And he went off and accepted this degree without telling Haddon anything about it.
Did he at least give him credit?
No credit at all. Haddon's name wasn't mentioned. And then when Luce came back, he said to Haddon, "Well, I've wiped your eye," meaning, "I've proved you wrong. Now I'm the big man at Yale."
Wow. That had to be an eye-opener for Haddon.
Haddon was shocked. He was deeply depressed, and he was not on speaking terms with Luce after that point for more than a year. But just toward the end of his life, it seemed like they might be coming together again.
They had different lifestyles as well. Luce was married a couple of times. Haddon was not married.
Haddon had a crazy lifestyle. When asbestos came out, he had a suit made entirely out of asbestos, and he would show up at parties tamping out cigarettes on the arm of his jacket.
My sense was that he might have been gay. Is that something that came up?
His sexuality is a mystery. It's a mystery, in fact, because Time Inc. unfortunately excerpted the parts of the interviews that discussed that and threw out the tapes. So there's no way of knowing, and there's no evidence that he was gay, but he certainly had difficulties in his relationships with women.
So how much of the Time magazine that we know today came directly from Haddon's input?
Time was fully born at the outset. Certainly, Luce shaped it. For instance, he turned it into a platform for his views. But from the very first issue, it gave you all of the news from around the world, and it went into great detail as well.
They came up with ideas like names make news, that section.
The People column, yes, and which became the basis for People magazine. Haddon also started the first radio quiz show, the Pop Question Game. And he came up with the ideas for Life and for Sports Illustrated.
So why do you think he's been forgotten? Was Luce that evil that he just simply wrote him out of history?
Luce wasn't evil, but he always felt like Haddon didn't respect him as much as he respected Haddon. And so after Haddon's death, even though Luce was heartbroken, within 2 weeks he had taken Haddon's name off the masthead of the magazine.
And Haddon died very young, didn't he?
Haddon died at 31, but you know, when he died, he was lionized as the greatest journalist of his generation, and the New York Times printed a very laudatory editorial.
He wound up being, Luce wound up getting him to give him full control of Time magazine in his will.
Well, this is where the book begins. It begins on Haddon's deathbed. And the story was that Luce came to Haddon's bedside and tried to convince him to sell enough stock in Time Inc. to guarantee Luce permanent control of the company. Haddon refused to do it, and in fact, he was so weak he could only sign his will with an X mark. But he mandated to his family that his stock in Time Inc. should not be sold for 49 years. Luce succeeded in breaking that will within a matter of months, guaranteeing him control not only of Time, but of all of the people who had once been Haddon's main men.
And the result is that Haddon is largely forgotten today.
Luce had also promised to print a book about Haddon within a year of his death, and he printed that promise in Time magazine. That book was not printed for 20 years, and when it finally came out, it was full of lies and inaccuracies.
And we hope that that's not the case with this new book, Isaiah Wilner's The Man Time Forgot, A Tale of Genius Betrayal and the Creation of Time magazine. Mr. Wilner will be where will you be?
I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble, Astor Place.
Tonight.
Tonight at 7 o'clock.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.